in stone, Eye of the Phoenix, or get them all together at a reduced price, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but...
You already know that drinking pure, high-alkaline pH water is the most important factor in maintaining high energy and vibrant health. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline ingredients. Using plasma pH drops is one of the best ways to make your water alkaline, to help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops per liter of water you drink to raise the pH to the ultimate level. Alkalizing water helps your body rid itself of acidic waste and increases the oxygen content of your body. Disease organisms like bacteria and cancer cannot survive in an alkaline, high pH environment.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and well, for the next 30 minutes, they're going to be the views of Sharon Harris and Dottie, and we're going to be talking about heart and body extract, and we're going to have 30 minutes of open lines here to end the program. So, without further ado, Sharon, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here. Thank you.
And Dottie, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
You're welcome. In fact, I didn't really know Dottie. We talked to her last month briefly when, of course, we had Sharon and Dottie on talking about heart and body extract. But, Sydney, I talked a little with Dottie a couple of days ago why she had listened to our programs and certainly had read our book and was certainly in agreement with our basic theme of what's going on. So I felt I had a good supporter out there, somebody who really understands we really are involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of Christian civilization. But let's get, Sharon, why don't you tell us a little bit about heart and body extract and why it's important and why people should be using it.
Okay, well, heart and body extract came into existence about 8 years ago, basically due to my own personal suffering with my health challenges. At 45 years old, going on 46, I started to get some pretty serious health conditions, even though I thought that I was eating well, eating vegetables and fruits and exercising and walking and swimming. And still, I wasn't getting enough nutrition in my body, and I started to go downhill pretty quick. One of the problems was very high blood pressure. It was 160 over 110. That's considered severe. I also had, at the same time, irregular heartbeat problems, racing heart, skipping beats, palpitations, and at the same time as that, I also had congestive heart failure problems. That's when you have an enlarged heart, you're very weak, you're very tired, lethargic, swelling in the legs, swelling in the feet, and low energy, very fatigued. So I was searching hard for something to help myself. I tried different kind of teas, different supplements, different nutritionals, different vitamins, minerals, and as much as I tried different things, nothing was working for me, and it was very, very frustrating to keep looking and looking and not getting results. Finally, I went to the MD one day, and he said to me, well, you better go on some high blood pressure pills, otherwise I don't want to see you dead at 45. And so reluctantly, I did go on the high blood pressure pills, but I didn't last very long on them, because my body didn't like the side effects. And what was happening to me was I was getting confused. I was getting very lethargic. I was going to the bathroom like crazy. I thought, this is worse than the high blood pressure. So I quickly went off of those high blood pressure pills after only being on them a couple of days or so. What happened around the same time, because I was trying so hard to find something and I wasn't successful, I prayed to God and I said, dear God, please lead me to something to help myself and others with this problem. And he led me to calling on a friend and someone I had known that was a very good master herbologist, Greg. And so I contacted Greg and I said to him, let's create a formula that will help people with heart disease problems. And together we formulated Heart and Body Extract. Now, Heart and Body Extract is a liquid organic supplement. It's made out of garlic, hawthorn berries, hawthorn leaves, coleus, motherwort, butcher's broom, bilberry, kelp, mistletoe, and ginger. The proportion of the formula is very important.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Sharon Harris. Sharon, go right ahead.
Okay. So the fact that the formula is a liquid is very important. The fact that it's organic is very important. The growing conditions where the formula come are very pristine, very pure in British Columbia area, in the mountains, glacier type, very purity oriented. So that's what you need to have a formula that will work. You need to have something that is very excellent, very pure, and very close to nature. So what I did was I tried the formula. Within 2 weeks of using Heart and Body Extract, my blood pressure went from 160 over 110 to 120 over 70. Then about 5 days, the irregular heartbeat, I should say, became regular. I didn't have those skipping beats, the racing heart. And within 30 days, I was much, much improved in terms of the congestive heart failure problems of the feet swelling and the ankle swelling. And I was, in fact, able to not have to have naps at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was able to walk up the stairs easier, and I was able to wear my normal shoes. And that was a wonderful thing.
And so basically then you decided to go ahead and market this, huh?
Well, I was actually quite cautious when I started to market this. I had been involved previously to that, another formula that I wasn't very happy with the results. I was really quite afraid to put my time and my money and my reputation behind something that I wasn't sure of. So in the first year, I was really quite careful in terms of not really marketing it, but kind of going from one friend to another very slowly. So I'd say in the first year maybe help maybe about 100 people or so. And that's pretty slow because, I mean, that can happen really quite quickly nowadays. But in that first year, slowly sharing it, about 100 people. And person after person after person after person that used the formula was getting results. So I was starting to believe in it more and more and more as time went on. It's one thing for me to get results, but it was another thing to see others get results consistently. So after a year, I was convinced, and I thought, yes, this is the real thing. Yes, we're getting results. Yes, I trust this. And then we started to market, yes.
All right, and find, so you actually been marketing now, what, for about 6 years, 7 years?
Actually 8 years now.
All right, fine. We'll hang on. We'll be back here in just a moment with Sharon. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sharon was just telling us how, of course, she started using it herself and then getting it for friends, and eventually, of course, began trying to mass market this across the country with, good results. Certainly, we've heard some great stories. We've got Dottie on the line. Dottie, how did you get started with Heart and Body Extract?
Well, actually, my problem started 4 years before that because I ended up in the Billings, Montana hospital with a heart attack and an arrhythmia. I had the same thing that Sharon described. They had to stop my heart and start it over again. And I was also diagnosed with the neuropathy and the water retention, too, in my legs, just as she was describing, but not as severely as that. And then I had diabetes, too. So I had all of those nasty things that needed attention, and I didn't find Sharon until about 4 years later when I had also, through heart problems and hemorrhage in front of my retinas, and I lost my central vision. So it was July of 04 then when I heard Sharon on the radio describing what this liquid herbal nutritional liquid did for her. And Roger, the host of the show, was describing what he was doing for him. And so having had a bit of training from my father many years before that regarding herbs, but I'd never addressed it to be serious about it. But I needed some answers because my I was having to take insulin four times a day, and my blood pressure was floating all over the place, and my sugar was all over the place, and so I needed something serious. So when I heard this description, we called Sharon the next day, next morning, and got product. So July the 17th of 04 was my red letter day. That's when I got Heart and Body Extract, and I knew it had a little bit of cayenne pepper in it, so I wasn't too wild about having a strong flavor, so I put it in my cranberry juice, which I was using for my kidneys to encourage them to function better, because that was sliding downhill to about 20% functioning. And so I did that for the first two or three times that I took Heart and Body, and it did go straight to my feet to help with the neuropathy. It helped with that circulation. Went into my blood system and started cleaning it out. And that's what Heart and Body does. It cleans the gunk out of the blood system. It cleans the walls of the circulatory system so that the blood, the healthy blood, or as it gets healthier, can flow more freely to all the organs of the body. Therefore, you're feeding the body healthy stuff. So it went straight to my feet, which was my worst problem right then, and started working on that circulatory system. Instead of 20 minutes of sleep, I was getting about an hour or so of sleep within 48 hours. Well, that's phenomenal when you know how neuropathy is. I mean, it is so painful, the aching, the throbbing, the burning. You just want to cut your feet off and forget it. And so I was getting some results there. Relief is the word I was really groping for, and I was sleeping more, and I was getting rid of the water retention also. That it was a combination of everything beginning. And now this was in the first three days that I noticed the water retention getting relieved, and so my ankles were going down. And then in the seventh, eighth, and ninth days is when I noticed something wonderful was happening with my eyes. And since this was a blood matter blocking my vision, that's what was happening. It was clearing that out. Again, it was cleaning out the gunk in my blood, getting my blood healthy so my blood could flow and keep my body happy and healthy. So I said to my husband, I want you to be my witness. Something great's happening. So I picked up the magazine that he had just brought in from the mailbox out front and put it about 5 inches up from my face. And for the first time in 4.5 years, I could see right straight through instead of those two big black blobs of, you know, the blockage from the blood. It was gray and smoky, like marbleized. But I could read right through and see that title of that magazine. And then my eyes fell down on the next two lines, which is white on the dark gray instead of the red on the dark gray magazine. And I could read that also. Well, I just sat down and cried because I had my life back. I mean, when you can't read, when you can't, I lost my equilibrium. I couldn't even walk in my house level. I had to walk with a cane. It was horrible. I had my life back because I was given my blood, the correct healthy thing, to get it healthy. And that was only, it was the ninth day that I had taken it. So that would be July the 25th then. And that's phenomenal. And so
And you've been taking it ever since then, huh, Dottie?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I will not miss my heart and body. In fact, I take it through the night, doctor, because if I'm up and about, you know, maybe going to the bathroom, getting a drink or whatever, I'll just take another little bit of heart and body in the eyedropper and drop it under my tongue. And you're supposed to take 15 drops three times a day anyway. And I do that, but I will take as many as 5 and 6 because you can't overdose on it. It's nothing but healthy. You're doing yourself a favor. And you're getting the good stuff because our food is so stripped of the value. And this is where the nutrition is. And we have the only formula of this kind. So it's unique to us. And we're just trying to get the word out to other people about, you know, just a little bit of what happened to me for other people would be fantastic. But it almost made my eyes so that I can see to read. Again, it's not perfect yet, but in an emergency, about a year ago, I did have to drive 22 miles. That's phenomenal. I don't want to have to again until it clears up a bit more. But I did survive it, and if it had not been for heart and body and that clearance, to my retina, that would have never happened. And my gum disease is going away, just about gone away. My nails, my skin, my hair, I'm healthier, folks. And it is phenomenal. It just keeps on going. Like I told you, my kidneys were malfunctioning, going on down to 20% performance. Well, they're now reaching an 88 on my new test. And that's phenomenal. I'm just so pleased with having the correct nutrition because Sharon chose to share. And that's what it is. God designed our body to put the correct things in it so that. And, of course, I'm not a smoker or a drinker. And so I really didn't expect my body to malfunction like that. But evidently I wasn't eating correctly in some way. And I had a lot of stress at 66 also when that began.
All right. Well, Sharon, why don't you tell us what the telephone number is? How if people like to get in touch with you? Why? How could they reach you?
Sure. The phone number is 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305. We also have a good website. It's heartandbodyextract.com, heartandbodyextract.com. We did have another site, but our webmaster is working on it, the Shopping Cart Challenge, so many of our clients are used to hbextract.com, which would be redirected to the www.heartandbodyextract.com. Probably confusing everybody now. Uh-oh. So anyway, just remember heartandbodyextract.com. That's the name of the product.com, and you'll be able to go on the website and see lots and lots of testimonials there.
All right, and Chris, is basically based upon testimonials. A lot of people seem to think it helps them. I know that my swelling has gone down in my legs, that I have mild congestive heart failure, but it was rather bothersome. But I will have to admit that the swelling actually has gone down, which is certainly makes me feel a lot better. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Sharon or for Dottie, why, give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Of course, Sharon does support Radio Liberty, but we think we take the product, and I'm certainly feeling good, and certainly my wife has been taking it as well. So it's supposed to take it three times a day and 15 drops at a dropper. Of course, what I do is I cheat. I actually put it in a spoon and then drop it under the tongue, and you can certainly tell when you've got it. You know, it's called Heart and Body Extract. It comes in a liquid solution, and certainly, do you have any idea how many people are taking it across the country now, Sharon?
Well, we actually have thousands of customers all over the world because of the power of the Internet, power of websites. I mean, you have people clicking through from Australia, New Zealand, and Nigeria, and Ireland, all sorts of places. And you were mentioning about efficacy and proof of effectiveness. One interesting thing that I did do, and a lot of companies don't do, they don't put the money behind that, I did sponsor clinical studies for Heart and Body Extra with naturopathic doctors, and those are about ready to wrap up. I'm waiting now for the final write-up, and that will be soon available on our website. So that's actually really exciting.
Well, of course,
it validates what I already know.
Well, of course, basically, of course, you probably have a pretty good idea what they're finding, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do. Absolutely.
And it's encouraging. All right, fine. Well, perhaps when these results are done, we'll be able to talk about that.
Yes.
Give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. All right, fine. Well, of course, now, who actually designed the formula for you?
The person that designed the formula was Greg. He's a man.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. 877-330-9796, or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
824 Liberty or 464-8295 if you're out there and you have a question at all. This is the time to ask, because you know, certainly Sharon's right on top of this, and Dottie's used it extensively, I guess, for a number of years. And so if you have any questions as to efficacy on it or what is known about it, why, give us a call. But herbs have been used. Certainly there are people, I remember when I was growing up, there was a Chinese herbologist in Oakland where I was raised. And of course, unfortunately, there were all sorts of rules and regulations about that, but he was helping an awful lot of people. And and certainly we have to learn from other societies, other cultures. There are things that they have that have been proven through the centuries to be effective. So I don't know much about herbs, but I do know that hawthorn is specifically good, and I know that certainly garlic has beneficial effects. Why didn't you use ginkgo biloba? How can that get you into trouble with other medications?
Why not ginkgo biloba? I think it can make the blood too thin. I think white willow bark for sure can do that. Ginkgo, I think that was another problem, or the similar problem was too thinning of the blood with the ginkgo. I believe that was the reason. But yeah, we were very careful, Greg and I, when we decided on the herbs, that they be gentle, they be nutritive, and they assist the body to heal itself. And basically, you know, very simple. Give the body what it needs. It'll fix itself up. It knows how. God created us so that our bodies are able to heal itself. The missing puzzle is giving the body what it needs. So with the heart and body, it's supplying the vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, phytonutrients that are abundant in the herbs so the body can heal itself. And it can heal itself a variety of things. It can be very surprising how much this formula can really do for people, simply giving the body what it needs. It's amazing what can happen. So it's been a real joy to represent the formula and help people. I mean, we've helped a lot of people, and that's a very rewarding thing, to give back quality of life to people.
Well, you seem to have a number of people who've certainly have actually benefited tremendously. I know we have a mutual friend, somebody I know that used to be on our program regularly, apparently has been using it and was really very, very, very enthusiastic about it. In fact, I'm going to talk to her, and if we're still doing this again next month, why, maybe we can get this person onto the line, somebody I know and care about very, very deeply. And apparently she's been tremendously helped by the use of this.
Yeah, she was tremendously helped by that, and she's very articulate. She would actually be very good to have on with the interview with you, because she's actually a really good speaker. It's like Dottie. She's an intelligent lady. Dottie, of course, is a school teacher, and while I'm a nurse, I'm not saying I'm not that articulate, but this Karen Lee woman is very articulate. I was very impressed when she was telling me her testimonial, and it was really very rewarding for me to hear that. And she made a comment. She said, if there was a choice between food in the house or heart and body, I would choose the heart and body. That's how important it is to me. So.
Well, knowing Karen Lee very well, why, that's quite a testimonial. And anyway, she's a good friend. And so anyway, I was so glad to know that she was feeling better as a result of it. Well, our telephone number again, once more, this will be the last time I'll give it out, at least this half hour, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have any questions about what Sharon is working with, heart and body extract, and apparently thousands of people are using it, not only in this country but throughout the world, and fortunately through the miracle of the internet and through internet radio, people have heard of it and they've used it, and at least the reports that we've had is that people have just really liked it, and that they started and they just keep right on taking it. Well, what's your parting thought you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, the parting thought I can say to them is give us a call, 866-295-5305, or visit our website, heartandbodyextract.com. Give us a call or contact us by email. We're very happy to hear from you, and we do respond quickly back to queries.
So. Well, the one thing you've got to learn on talk radio is you always have to give your number twice because people never get it the first time. So why don't you go ahead and give it twice?
Okay, good idea. So the number to call is 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305. Give
okay.
us a call.
Okay, fine. Well, thanks very much. Hey, Dottie, thanks very much for being with us, Sharon. Nice
My
to
pleasure.
Have you with us. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program for the next half hour, Open Lines, right here at Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan, and this is the time I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there across America and hearing us, why, we do hope that if you're in a position, will want to help and support Radio Liberty. And of course, you can do that either by calling us at 1-800-544-8927 or going to our webpage and punching the donate button. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Certainly, I want to know that the Sharon does support Radio Liberty, but we certainly have been taking the product and been very pleased with it for ourselves. Now we're going to have open lines for the next half hour, so if you're out there listening, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, certainly, there is a great deal of talk now about the fact that President Obama says that he doesn't want to be running the automotive companies. He wants to get the recovery going and get rid of the companies. But there are a lot of strange things that are happening. Basically, with the Chrysler situation, Chrysler's gone into bankruptcy, and the Obama administration has simply taken over the bankruptcy situation. Ordinarily, this is handled by the courts, but not with the Obama administration. They have simply stiffed the banks, pension funds, insurance companies, people who had bonds or stocks in General Motors, and told them that take just a small portion of what they were entitled to. And he is intent upon turning the company, Chrysler Motor Company, over to Fiat. They're going to get 20% of it. But the way that the transfer is structured, why, of course, they could very well end up with 51% majority ownership in Chrysler. Now, why would transferring ownership of Chrysler to an Italian company create jobs in the United States? Oh, well, they're supposed to have the jobs here, but they can manufacture most of the products overseas and just assemble them here. We see this really demonstrated very well with, of course, the General Motors bailout. We've given them, I don't know, $15 billion more, and we're going to give them a couple of billion dollars now and another $5 or $6 billion. Why are we doing that when General Motors is transferring their production overseas? In fact, General Motors announced this last week. It's going to begin importing about 25% of the cars that they sell in the United States. They're going to import these from China and from South America and from Mexico. Why are we giving General Motors money so that they can create jobs in China? Why are we giving General Motors money so they can create jobs in Brazil? Why are we giving General Motors money so that they can create jobs in Russia? And they're going to be importing 25% of their jobs, and we're going to be creating jobs for other countries. Because you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, the real plan is to lower our living standards, to transfer our manufacturing overseas. But they cannot let the American people know that the people in Washington, D.C. do not have any loyalty to America. They want to create jobs in other countries. You can read the plan, the master plan, in the Earth Charter. You need to get it. You need to read it. It's available on the Internet. If you cannot get it on the Internet, why, then you get any of our other products, why simply ask for a copy of the Earth Charter. We'll send it to you. And you read points 10A and 10B. And in fact, we interviewed Mr. James Tucker, who was at the Bilderberger meeting. Of course, he, as an uninvited guest, you can't get in, but he knows what's said there. He has contacts. And that was just this afternoon. You'll find the interview up on the Internet. And, of course, he was just saying that the real plan is to transfer America's wealth overseas and to lower the living standards in the United States as we raise the living standards elsewhere. But, of course, we're not going to transfer the wealth of the wealthy. It's just the common people like you and me. Well, our telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I would simply comment that Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor, said, why are we giving money to a company that is not an American company? General Motors is not an American company. It's an international company. And so we're giving them money so they can build their factories overseas. But then he continued, but why are we giving money to AIG? AIG is not an American company. It's an international company. And a lot of that money that we gave to AIG, the $180 billion, they're, of course, transferring to banks over in Europe, in Germany, in Switzerland, in Ireland. Why are we transferring the wealth of the American people throughout the world? Why, to lower the living standards of the American people, and, of course, to raise the living standards throughout the world. And when you understand that, it all makes sense. Well, let's go to Victor, who's calling from Amsterdam, New York. Again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And it's open lines Friday. Hi, Victor. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Steele. I listen to you all the time.
I'm so glad you do, and I hope you got all the other people back there in Amsterdam, or at least a few of them listening.
I hope so. I called a couple people.
Okay, great. Well, what would you like to talk about this evening?
You're saying the lowering the standards of America?
They want to lower the living standards of America. In other words, they feel that the American people have it too good, that we have the highest living standards in the world. So the only way that they can raise the living standards throughout the rest of the world is to lower the living standards here. After all, there's only so much money, so they're going to transfer our manufacturing, transfer our jobs, transfer our wealth to other countries, and that's what it's all about. But they can't let the American people know that, because they wouldn't approve of it, and they wouldn't vote for the candidate Socialist Party A or Socialist Party B. So you've got to keep telling them, oh, we're great patriots, we love America, we want to, everything's going to be fine, just trust me and follow me. And there is a master plan, Victor. Have you ever read the Earth Charter?
Not yet. I'm going to buy some books now.
Okay, fine. Well, just ask for... Go ahead.
I follow you behind you. I listen to you for about 5 years now.
And this is the first time you've called, isn't it?
Maybe the first time I called.
Right, I thought so. Okay, go ahead.
I tutor voluntarily at the Learning Center in Amsterdam.
Great.
I went in there a couple of times. There's people, the grown adults, that don't understand three-digit mathematics. I'm talking... addition and subtraction, grown adults.
Well, they've been dumbed down. There's been an organized effort to dumb down our people going to school with a new math. They don't teach them to read. They don't teach them phonics. They know, of course, that looks, see, nothing doesn't work. They can't spell.
They can't answer complex fractions.
Well, I know, but they've dumbed our people down, and then they probably fluoridate the water, too, because that lowers the intelligence. And
mental illness.
Right, and then they give them the vaccines with the mercury in it, and that is toxic on the brain. Most of the vaccines have aluminum in there. That's toxic on the brain. And there's so many things that they're doing to destroy the minds of our people.
Is it the social elites that want to run the system, make it like Russia? There are only a few control the masses?
Absolutely. That's exactly that's what we have right now. In fact, they had a meeting of the world leaders last week over in Greece, and not a word of it in the media, because they control the media. You can, if you have access to the Internet, you can go up and read about the Bilderberger meeting that was held last week, and not a word in the American media, because the last thing they want the American people to know is the electoral system is fraudulent. They have two political parties. They control both political parties, and they make mockery out of the concept of our representative type of government, because these people hate the Constitution. They want a ruling elite. They have established a feudalistic system, and they're the lords, and we're the serfs, and that's what it's really all about, Victor, I'm afraid.
I know the Amsterdam school budget, the Schenectady school budget, and the Troy school budget has been declined this year. They're catching on. I work those three places at Domino's Pizza. They know me in those cities. And I'm a real patriot in America, and I still don't have a good job. And I'm struggling on disability I'm a graduate from Stony Brook.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying, Dr. Stan?
I know, and things are going to get a lot worse, Victor, but they're going to get worse, and the only hope for America is if we can educate the American people that, and that God will intervene down the line somewhere.
I hope so, because it doesn't get any easier for me, because I got to deal with people with mental illness, people that doesn't understand me, and they want to drug me up in the meantime, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Well,
I pray for America, you know what I'm saying? Get America back on its feet today. I want to have a handbag.
Well, I hope that you'll get that Earth Charter, understand. I mean, they lay it all out there. They want a new spirituality. They want a one world government. But they want equitable distribution of wealth, not only within nations, which is communism, but between nations, which is what they're doing. That's why they're transferring our jobs overseas.
Sam?
What?
I cleaned out Bill Petrosino's, Bill's Beverage parking lot.
Right.
And Clint Eastwood said at a commercial afterwards, leave your legacy behind with the children.
Right.
After I cleaned out the parking lot for almost free. And it was a big, pretty, I cleaned out two blocks in the parking lot. And one house I cleaned out to save the guy's life, because they had a sewage plant. The sewage was going right into his house.
Well, God bless you for what you're doing.
I didn't get paid for that.
But help us get the word out, Victor. We have to depend on you, because I can't do much more than 5 hours of talk radio a day, but at least we have an opportunity. We have a voice, and we appreciate all your help and support. God bless you. Thanks so much. Well,
you know what I'm saying, though?
What?
The thing is, though, there's only a few patriarchs like me left, and it's going to go down the tubes.
There are a lot of good people out there, Victor. There are a lot of good people. They just don't understand.
I hope my voice is being heard.
I'm sure it is. I think you're being heard tonight all across America, all across the world. Good night.
Someday I will work. Maybe I will be a teacher. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. God bless, and thanks so much. Let's go to Roy, who's calling from Louisiana. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Give us a call if you've got something you'd like to talk about or share, or you got a question. Hi, Roy. How are you doing?
Hey, Dr. Stan. I'm fine. Good to speak with you. Is Radio Liberty going to handle heart and body extract?
No. We're going to let Sharon go ahead and do that.
Okay.
And so if you're interested in it, why just give her a call they seem to be very, very nice people. We've certainly enjoyed working with them.
All right. I had a rather startling thing the other day. I was in Missouri, and I went to buy some beef, and they're required to label it as per country of origin. And the label read, a product of the United States, Canada, or Mexico.
Isn't that interesting? I wonder what that means. Well, of course, you know what it means. They want, of course, to unite the United States, Canada, and Mexico. They want to do away with our sovereignty. That's certainly one of the major plans of the elite, to create a North American Union like they have a European Union. That's fascinating. I'd never heard that before.
That was the first time I'd seen it, and it shocked me. I enjoy listening to you, Dr. Stan. May God bless you and your wife and your ministry.
Now, is this the Roy that we've talked to in the past? You a doctor?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I'm still here.
I thought I recognized your voice. Well, how's the practice of medicine going?
Oh, it's fine. It's fine.
You're still enjoying it?
Oh, it's like almost anything else. It gets more difficult all the time, with more and more control by the government and the insurance companies and everybody else.
Well, this is the thing. I'm really very, very worried about this socialized medical program, because it's really going to mean rationing access to health care and killing the elderly. You know, did you realize that actually starting last year, they were actually not getting enough money into Medicare to pay all the bills? They were actually having, for the first time in the history of the program, going back to 1965, they had to put out more than they took in. So they went to the fund, the Medicare Trust Fund, and you know something? There isn't any money in it. They'd already spent it all. There was just a big IOU. That's why they're in such a hurry to get socialized medicine in, because they've been lying to us. My goodness, we got all this money in the Social Security Trust Fund, and we got all this money in the Medicare Trust Fund, and there isn't any money there. So the only way that they're going to be able to really keep up Medicare at all is to have socialized medicine, tell people they're going to do it a lot cheaper, you know, we're going to save a lot of money. We hear this recurrent theme, we're going to save a lot of money, we're going to have socialized medicine, we're going to provide medical care for everybody, and we're going to save money. Well, they're not going to save money. What they're going to do is begin rationing access to health care. The elderly, they say that 30% of the cost of their medical care goes in the last year. And if you could just kill them off, why, then you would save all that money, and you could use it elsewhere. But what they're going to do is end up bankrupting our nation, rationing access to health care, and destroying what was once the finest health care system in the world. It's no longer that way, because all the government regulations and the FDA and the drug companies, and a lot of greed on the part of the health insurance companies. But we're in real trouble as far as medicine is concerned, and I don't think the average person really understands the program is to ration access to health care. And it's going to be like it is in any socialist country, where you want to get health care, you're going to have to bribe the people. If you don't bribe them, you're not going to get health care.
Yes, sir. Certainly, I agree with everything you said.
Well, Roy, it's good to hear from you. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
I enjoyed speaking with Dr. Stan.
God bless. Okay, fine. Well, that's Roy, and he's a doctor who calls us occasionally. I haven't heard from him in a couple of years, but I recognize his voice. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY-464-8295. And, you know, it's amazing the way that they can sell these lies to the American people. Why, do you remember a few years ago where they were saying, you know, electricity is so expensive here? Of course, it's cheaper here in the United States, was cheaper than any other place in the world, but they were going to make it cheaper by deregulating electricity. All we have to do is deregulate electricity, bring the competition in, and everything's going to be fine. We're going to be able to cut the cost. And, of course, they knew it wasn't going to work. We actually put together a syllabus on this subject. We actually have a four-tape set on this subject. I talked to some of the leading experts in the world, and they said, look, every place they've tried deregulation of electricity, the price has gone up, and it's gone up dramatically. And so what happened? Well, they brought it here in California. They put it to the state legislature. Every Republican, conservative Republican, every liberal, a Democratic liberal, you know, voted in favor of deregulation. I mean, who could be in favor, you know, of lowering the price of electricity? Well, of course, it was just exactly the opposite. It raised the cost of electricity. It doubled it. In some places, it tripled it. And believe me, these new programs that they're coming up with now for carbon control, carbon capping, are going to double the cost of electricity two or three times more. Why? Because they want to drive this up so much because why should you have cheap electricity when electricity is expensive every other place in the world? And all of this is designed to raise the cost of gas, of electricity, and then they're going to raise the price of gasoline so that they can lower our living standards, and you're not going to be able to afford your air conditioning and your electric heat and things like that. Of course, many of our factories will leave the country, but after all, don't the people in South America need factories more than they need them here? There is an organized effort, as we said, to lower the living standards on the American people. If you've not, of course, read the Earth Charter, you need to get it on the Internet. And if you can't find it and you get something from us, just ask for a copy. Read our, listen to our program this afternoon. It's pre-recorded. It should be posted by tomorrow, my program with Jim Tucker, who pointed out that this is exactly the program of the Bilderbergers. These people of great wealth with billions and trillions of dollars, they want equitable distribution of wealth, your wealth, not theirs. We'll be back in just a moment. If you'd like to give us a call, fine. Otherwise, we'll wrap up the program shortly. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's always a challenge here when we have that have half an hour, and of course we depend upon those of you out in the listening audience to give us a call. But certainly it's Friday. I'm sure a lot of people.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us.
Go to our webpage, and there's a donate button there, and you push it and see what happens. And then, of course, we certainly want to suggest that you really need to get the material that we are offering. We have a tremendous amount of information you won't be able to get elsewhere. We put together a syllabus called the Membership List of the Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, it goes along with my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. There are groups here in America organized. And, of course, they know exactly what they're doing. They hate America. They hate freedom. They believe, of course, we should have a feudal elite and they should be part of the elite. There's always been a desire on the part of certain men to want power over the lives of others. I don't want to have power over other people's lives. I want to just be allowed to be free and to have my family free. But these people don't look at it that way. They're extremely intelligent. They believe, of course, that some men are born to rule, or most people are born to be ruled. Actually, a friend of mine was told that by David Rockefeller many years ago. David Rockefeller is probably the single most powerful man in America today, certainly one of the most powerful men in the world. If you haven't read his memoirs, we have it, where he actually admits to being part of a secret cabal that is working behind the scenes to create a new international order. And he says, I've been accused of being, my family, part of an international cabal that is conspiring against America, working to bring in a new international order, and if that's the charge, I am guilty, and I'm proud of it. Flagrant, page 405, David Rockefeller's memoirs. You need to get the book. You need to read it. You need to understand how close his daughters are to Fidel Castro. Why would David Rockefeller's daughters be close to Fidel Castro? Because Fidel Castro is the elitist, and everybody else is a feudal slave on the island that we turned over to him. And if you doubt that we turned Cuba over to Fidel Castro, knowing he was a communist, and we've kept him in power, I would simply suggest you get my DVD, World Revolution. It includes my interview with Ambassador Earl Smith, the American ambassador to Cuba, 1957, 58, 59. And he will tell you how the United States State Department and CIA intentionally transferred control of Cuba to Fidel Castro, knowing full well that he was a communist. So there was not, they knew what they were doing, but you need an enemy. We have to have an enemy to rally people behind our fearless leaders like Mr. Rockefeller and Mr. McNamara and Paul Volcker and all the people in the Trilateral Commission. And you must understand, and you've heard me say it before, but you're going to hear me say it again, the Trilateral Commission, for all intents and purposes, controls the American government, along, of course, with the B team, which is the Council on Foreign Relations. But since between 1976 and 2008, every president and or vice president of the United States has been between 1976 and 2008, every president of the United States and or vice president of the United States has been a member of the Trilateral Commission. Do you think that happened just by accident? Certainly that six of the eight presidents of the World Bank, eight of the 12 U.S. trade representatives that established trade relations came from the membership roles of the Trilateral Commission. that that seven of the nine secretaries of state and nine of the 12 of the 11 secretaries of defense came from the membership roles of the Council on Foreign Relations of the Trilateral Commission. Do you honestly believe that happened by accident? If go to my website, radioliberty.com, pull down our newsletters, you'll get the verification for everything we're saying. And then, of course, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And pray that, of course, we can get this message out to more people across America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality. Not illusion or delusion that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, right now, it's Friday, at 9 o'clock Friday, and that's the time when William Grigg is with us. Hi, William. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing great, and it's wonderful to be with you again this evening.
Well, of course, for those of you who don't remember, William Grigg was the senior editor of the New American Magazine. He's a prolific writer and speaker and certainly one of our favorite guests. So what are we going to talk about tonight, William?
I think we need to talk about the most recent instant jihadist plot that the federal government confected and then busted just a couple of days ago with these four pathetic little ex-convicts in White Plains, New York, who were supposedly involved in this devious and well-laid plot to conduct bombings at synagogues and to obtain Stinger anti-aircraft missiles for use against military planes. It's cut from the same cookie-cutter template as at least a half a dozen other supposed terrorist plots that the government has unveiled for public edification since 2002, roughly.
Well, do they have their agent provocateur who's talking to all these poor, these Muslims, not very smart, one of them's, intellectually challenged and not very smart people, and they usually have their agent provocateur who gets paid $1 million or so, a couple of $1 million, mm-hmm. simply to talk people into agreeing to go along with his plan to carry out a terrorist attack here in the United States. There's no threat to America. There'd be nothing if it weren't for the fact that the government was actually using agent provocateurs to encourage illegal activity. What sort of government would do that? But go ahead.
Well, the sort of government that wants to economize on the possibility of actual justice being done and wants to shape events and, more importantly, public perception in a certain direction. You're entirely correct. You're dealing here with four ex-convicts, only one of whom appeared to be minimally mentally competent. One of them is borderline mentally backward or handicapped. Another one is on a prescription drug for schizophrenia, and then another one appears to be also not on the right-hand side of the proverbial bell curve and probably somewhere closer to the left-hand side, the trailing end of the bell curve in terms of his intellect. And there was, of course, as there always is, a so-called cooperating informant who was almost certainly the impresario of the whole plot. This is something that was laid up in the pages of the Wall Street, not the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, just yesterday in the initial reports of this episode. You had to dig down about 12 or 13 paragraphs in order to find the relevant and significant quote, but here it is. A federal law enforcement official described the plot as aspirational, meaning that the suspects wanted to do something but had no weapons or explosives, and described the operation as a sting with a cooperator within the group. It was fully controlled at all times, a law enforcement official said. That's probably the only unadorned truth we're going to hear about this so-called plot. It was fully controlled. It was scripted by the FBI. It was directed by the FBI. You had somebody working, if you will, as the equivalent of a second unit director in the form of the provocateur, a cooperating witness within this group. And the thing that I find really interesting about this is how closely this tracks at least two other nearly identical so-called plots that most likely involve the same informant. Now, to back up just a little bit, just within the last couple of weeks, the federal government finally managed to corral a conviction against the so-called Keys of David group, which is so much like this group in New York that the resemblances are more than accidental.
Now, that was the third. They had to try them three times. The first two times the juries realized that this was all contrived by the government, and there was a hung jury. But they were going to keep trying them over and over and over and over again until they got a conviction. They finally got a conviction on the third time around. We'll be right back here in just a moment. We'll go right ahead.
The thing that's really frustrating is that if you have a federal jury, unfortunately too many juries at the district level, state level, tend to be very pliant, and they seem to be composed of people vetted for their pliancy and their suggestibility with respect to the prosecution's case. The role of a jury is, in our Western system, is to be skeptics. They're supposed to represent, and this is not well understood, but if this doesn't describe the role of the jury in the Anglo-Saxon tradition, I don't know how better to describe it. The role of the jury, quite frankly, is to be an advocate for the defendant in the sense that they presume the defendant is innocent until the prosecution meets the burden of proof by preponderance of evidence or beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the phrase everybody should be familiar with. The reason we have a jury is that it has plenary authority to settle not only the facts of the case in terms of whether a defendant is guilty of a given crime or a given offense, and also the justice of the law. That's an element of the role of the jury that's not well understood. The jury, when it goes into deliberation, when it's sequestered and deliberates a case, basically has untrammeled authority to decide, first of all, whether the defendant is guilty of a given offense and whether the law under which the defendant is being prosecuted is just, if it resonates with the Constitution, with the common law, and with what Blackstone called the law of revelation or God's law. That the jury has complete plenary authority to do these things. It's not well understood, and quite frankly, most of the time, prosecutors and judges and more than a few public defenders try to winnow people principle and conviction out of juries, so you don't have juries that are able to exercise the full spectrum of their authority. But there it is. That's the function of the jury. It doesn't matter how you were instructed by the judge. It doesn't matter what the true bill from the grand jury might say in terms of the supposed facts of the case. A jury is supposed to be equipped with a sufficiently acute skeptical intellect and sufficient principled independence to decide the facts and the law of a case. And so when you're dealing with federal juries, it seems as if the purpose of a federal jury is merely to rubber stamp whatever a federal prosecutor brings before them in terms of an indictment and a conviction. It really doesn't surprise me that there is really no noticeable pushback from most federal juries when they're impaneled to hear a federal case. And so the fact that the Seas of David so-called conspiracy managed to go through three iterations before the feds were finally able to find a jury willing to convict them is really quite a potent testimony.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Will Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Will was just saying that certainly with the so-called Sears Tower, the people who were going to go up that Sears Tower, they had, of course, to try them three times before they could get a jury to go along with the prosecution, because it was so obvious that these people certainly were inexperienced. They certainly were talked into this whole thing by an agent provocateur who was paid a fabulous sum of money simply to entrap some of his fellow Muslims. And this is a routine. They've done this a number of times, because there is no terrorist threat. If there is really a terrorist threat, they would have closed the southern border immediately. They would have had air marshals on every airplane. They would have done everything they could to make sure that the pilots were armed on every airplane to protect us from, from a similar episode as happened on September 11th. They did none of those things. They did everything they could to block the pilots from being armed. They had air marshals on perhaps 1 in 10 planes, perhaps not even that. They absolutely refused to close the border. And when was the last major attack here in the United States? And, all they would have to do, they could go out and set forest fires across America. They could derail planes. They wouldn't even have to, actually come in contact with people. But the terrorist threat is entirely manufactured by our government to justify going over and killing people in Iraq and killing people in Afghanistan and now killing people in Pakistan as a prelude to the war with the Muslim world, the nuclear war that's coming with the Muslim world. But that takes us to another story anyway. Certainly, William is pointing out really the hypocrisy of the conviction on a number of occasions of very stupid people. These people might very well be in jail because they're stupid, but not that they ever would have conceived of a attack on the United States if they had not been talked into it and convinced by very carefully trained and highly paid agent provocateurs. So go right ahead with the story.
That's exactly right. The federal attorney who announced the criminal complaint, the indictment of these men, said that these are very dangerous men, and it's hard to imagine a deadlier plot. Well, it's hard to imagine a group of people who are less competent to carry out a plot than the four who were paraded for public inspection just yesterday. And that, once again, is true of what happened with the so-called Caesar David conspiracy. The people who composed the so-called Caesar David group were pathetic outliers socially and religiously. They had no particular aptitudes, no particular academic or occupational acumen. They were people, really, who weren't ambitious in any way, and suddenly there descends in their midst somebody who riles them up and starts talking jihad and claims to have connections, money, and materiel to do something that would elevate these people and give their lives some kind of meaning. What you have here, really, in the personages of these federal provocateurs, and they do make a huge amount of money. We don't know how many of them are on the federal payroll. As I mentioned before, the DEA has admitted to having at least 10,000 on its payroll. The FBI has at least that many. I'd be willing to bet that they lowball that figure by a factor of 10. I would be willing to bet that we're dealing with tens of thousands of federally trained provocateurs of various kinds that are seated across the landscape looking for opportunities to adhere to people who might, in an unguarded moment, say something that indicates that they might be susceptible to a sales pitch from one of these people.
Well, I would point out that on a number of occasions, I've had people come to me and say, well, we're never going to get out of this until we, of course, take up arms and fight the government and start blowing things up. Mm-hmm. And, these are, frankly, provocateurs, government agents who are trying to entrap me. And ladies and gentlemen, they will try to entrap you too. And understand this, when, of course, you have a government that's paying people to befriend you and become your very good friends and then to entrap you into saying something. This is what happened. That's how they got Randy Weaver. That they could justify ending up killing his wife and his son because they had the agent provocateur planted with him. And it's a standard procedure. I know that Pat Patriciana, who put out the film back in 1994, The Clinton Chronicles, that infiltrated his office. One of his best friends was an FBI informant who talked him into doing something, making a statement on one of his films so we could get a lawsuit against him and destroyed his life and his family. They did the same thing with Michael Rupert, who wrote The Crossing the Rubicon. His best friend was an FBI informant, and why is the FBI planting informants in the conservative movement? But go right ahead, William.
You're talking about, of course, the tendrils, the residual vestigial remnants of the COINTELPRO program of the late 1960s, which was set up for the specific purpose of infiltrating groups that were considered to be anti-government of whatever political persuasion, whether you're talking about people who are racial collectivists like the Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan or the Black Panthers. They're all racial collectivists. They adhere to racially defined collective identity. Or whether you're talking about people who are considered to be anti-government of the libertarian or paleoconservative or conservative perspective, you had efforts by the FBI to insinuate infiltrators into these groups in order to keep them under surveillance, and where possible to discredit them by moving them in the direction of committing acts that would either create fissures within these groups or, where necessary and possible, to provoke them into committing crimes or conspiring to commit crimes, and then using these conspiracies, these plots, or these overt acts in the direction of criminal behavior in order to arrest and decapitate the leadership of given organizations. It was part of the folk wisdom, the received understanding and wisdom of activists in the 1960s, that if you're a member of an activist group and suddenly somebody you don't know shows up and starts speaking in militant terms about the supposed need to commit acts of violence, that person was almost certainly a federal informant. And I think that that, of course, is still the case today, where people are becoming quite properly indignant about the antic parade of corruption and malfeasance on the part of our government as our economy, of course, pitches into the deepest downturn since the Great Depression of the 1930s, and we see the Great Repression on the horizon here as the government becomes more militant and more militarized in its administration of what it's pleased to call the law. People are becoming very understandably upset. That's a very healthy thing. That's part of our national character, is that Americans have authority issues. We have to. I mean, there's nothing at all wrong with authority that exists among people. We believe in that. We believe in the idea that there is a law that we all have to obey, that the two great commandments, the Ten Commandments, those other elements of the Judeo-Christian heritage, the biblical heritage that sustain our institutions, represent the authority for everything that everybody does in terms of private contract and also in terms of delegated political authority. We don't have any problem with the idea of authority being exercised among us to the good of everybody. We have issues with authority being exercised over us. We don't believe that we should be required to kowtow or genuflect or curtsy before anybody. That's not the way Americans have ever been. We developed an aversion of that, quite frankly, before most of our ancestors came here. They were aversive to the idea that they should be required to bow in the presence of somebody who is their supposed genetic or hereditary superior. And so the fact that there is this deep strain of cussedness and irrepressible rebelliousness in the American character is an immense blessing, not only to ourselves, but quite frankly to the world. And that's something, of course, that is a strength that can be turned against us if we forget the fact that there is this thing called the law. We are not entitled to commit aggressive violence against people. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about private citizens like ourselves who are fellow victims of our corrupt government. It doesn't matter if we're talking about people who are abusing their delegated offices at the expense of the rest of us. It doesn't matter if we're talking about the power elite behind the corrupt government that is exploiting the government to pursue its ends. We don't have the right to commit aggressive violence against anybody. We have the right, the unqualified right, impressed upon our nature by our Creator, to arm self-defense. That much is very, very true. And that's a separate issue from the idea of taking up arms for the purpose of taking people out. That's not the way that our colonial forebears approached it. They did not wage a war of terror of that sort. These were people who waged a necessary war of defense with their backs to their homes and their faces to their enemy, but they didn't go out and kill people in their beds. They didn't go out slitting throats or blowing up buildings. They understood that when you're conducting a war of legitimate defense, you don't have to resort to tactics of that sort. So there's a clear and important cleavage, distinction, if you will, between these perspectives that we have to maintain. But unfortunately, the tenor of the times we live in is such that many people are being slowly led into a very dangerous state of mind in which anything they seek to do would be justified. People who find themselves in deep economic privation, who find their career prospects being taken from them, their very livelihood destroyed, businesses taken from them by arbitrary whim and given to other people, We're seeing all kinds of things of that sort starting to happen now. And the estimable Gerald Celente, who's one of the best and most perspicuous futurists, who has been very, very canny at calling every significant economic development of the last couple of decades, likes to say that when people are left with nothing to lose, they lose it. And so we're going to be seeing a lot of people who are going to be receptive to the sales pitches made by these folks who are acting on behalf of the government as evangelists of radicalism, as Typhoid Marys, if you will, of the type of militancy that would justify further enrichment of the garrison state that is governing us right now. There are tens of thousands of those people out there. They are professionals. They are utterly unscrupulous. They are paid to subvert people. They are paid to gain the confidence of people. That's what a con game is. A con artist gains the confidence of his chosen target. And these people are government-approved con artists who ingratiate themselves with people who are in bad situations and carefully lead them into criminal behavior for the purpose of staging these little melodramas that reinforce in the public mind the supposed need for all of us to seek the protection of the almighty state.
Amen. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with William Grigg. And certainly, unfortunately, we have people in government who want to create the impression that there's a terrible threat in America from terrorism. Well, we've done more to recruit terrorists by going over and torturing people in Abu Ghraib. But did you ever wonder why the government released those pictures, the initial pictures of the humiliation of the Muslims over there in Abu Ghraib? It was to incite the Muslim world against America and recruit people into the terrorist movement. And it worked. It worked very effectively. And the terrorist movement has grown because of what has been done. Go right ahead.
I'd like to comment briefly on something you said a couple of minutes ago, Dr. Stan, when you talked about the patent phoniness of the terrorist threat as attested by the actions of the government that display a complete lack of concern about terrorism. I really don't think that there is all that much concern at the policymaking level and beyond the policymaking level, if you will, with the danger that terrorism would present to the common run of the citizenry. As far as they're concerned, we, the hoi polloi, the common people, really don't matter that much except as a pool of resources to be exploited to the ends of the power elite and to the benefit of those who are involved in this corrupt exercise of rent-seeking called politics. But what I find really interesting is the fact that there are no really extraordinary measures being taken to protect the most important people by the reckoning of the ruling elite from the supposed threat of terrorism. We don't really see people taking refuge, although Dick Cheney did. Dick Cheney is naturally secretive by nature. I believe that when he was boring around in his subterranean network of hidden lairs, it was not so much that Mr. Cheney was afraid of being taken up by a terrorist. It's just that I believe that he, like anybody, any other representative of the Legion of the Undead, would spontaneously combust if he were exposed to naked sunlight. But when you're talking about people who are the current policy-making elite today, they're not taking refuge in Mount Weather. They're not undertaking extraordinary security measures when they fly or they travel. This is not true, of course, of the president and his retinue. They're like a royal progress, cubed and then cubed again. I mean, it's quite obscene. Every president since probably at least Nixon has traveled in such grand style that it makes the luxurious accoutrements and fittings of Cleopatra's barge look like the sort of thing you'd carry around in a canoe. I mean, they literally have a whole fleet of aircraft that accompany the president everywhere he goes, and a whole ground fleet of automobiles. And the better part of the better part of a division in terms of the security personnel who accompany him, and chefs and trainers and official tasters and all manner of sycophants and lackeys and minions who follow the president everywhere he goes. But that's just part and parcel of the fact that the president is the head of an empire, and that's how emperors comport themselves. But when you take a look at the Congress, you take a look at the people in the executive branch departments that are devoted to homeland security, as it's now styled, they're not undertaking exceptional measures to protect themselves against the threat of terrorism. They know that we're not under siege. in spite of the fact that our government, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, is doing everything it possibly can to rile up and motivate terrorism and the attitudes that conduce to terrorism overseas through this heedless, arrogant, interventionist foreign policy that is perfectly calibrated to alienate a billion people or more against the United States. In spite of that, we're not facing the type of onslaught that a lot of people seem to think that we confront every single day. But the institutions that have arisen now and that have taken root and flourished subsequent to 9/11 all depend upon refreshing the public mind from time to time with the idea that there is this all-encompassing threat, that there are people whose very meat and drink is to hate Americans supposedly for our freedoms, what few of them still exist, and their aspirations are constantly focused on the idea of killing Americans wherever they can find them. That can become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is William Grigg, and just saying that if there was really a terrorist threat in America, then all the members of Congress and all the members of the Cabinet would, all have large groups of bodyguards around them, but they know this is really not a threat. You create the perception of a threat, in the minds of the American people by having them, stand in line when they get into a federal building, have them stand in line when they go to the airport. Richard Haass, the director of the chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, was writing about how this was going to happen back in 1966. It was all planned, and when you go into the airport now, you have to go through a maze like a rat, and then you get up to the point, and then you have to take off your belt, and you have to take off your shoes, and you have to take off your coat, and have to take off your sweater, and then, of course, you've got to put them in into the box there. Now, of course, they're going to protect us from Osama bin Laden. You're going to have your middle name on your ticket. If your middle name isn't on your ticket and it's on your identification, why, of course, you're not going to be able to fly because we've got to protect the people from Osama bin Laden. Not only that, but the new rule is you can't put your shoes in the container, in the little tray that you put everything else in. They have to be put separate because you might have explosives in your shoe. I think his name was John Reed or Robert Reed, something like that.
Yeah.
Right. Who was so, intent upon blowing up the plane he was on that he was trying to light a fuse to CD4 with a match. Now, of course, you can't explode CD4 with a match, but that didn't matter. I mean, he thought that his shoelaces were fuses, and, this guy was set up, and he'll spend the rest of his life in prison, where he really deserves to be because he is so stupid. A man like that would never be allowed out in the general population. I feel very sorry for him. He was obviously set up for this whole thing. Could you imagine sitting in an airplane trying to light your shoelaces on fire so you could blow yourself up? Go right ahead.
Yeah, you're dealing here, of course, with an exceptionally stupid class of people who are being used as a cannon fodder, or being used as the dramatic props of this ongoing melodrama that involves the constant cultivation of these so-called terrorist groups, and they harvest a great deal of public relations benefit every time they crack down on one of these groups that the FBI has been so diligently cultivating. And I do think that it's interesting that if you take a look at the common morphology of these various so-called plots, you've got a group of people, usually they're people who seem to be specially selected for their lack of intellectual agility, or in some instances because they're clinically mentally ill. That's the case with a number of people of the Seize the David group. That's the case with the so-called plot that was just busted in New York. They're often approached by people who are part of the sort of loose-knit Muslim community in which these people are found. And the other common thread that we find here is that a lot of them are people who are ex-convicts who were sent to prison and became Muslims in prison. And usually they were sent to prison on narcotics charges. And that's a really good example of the way that the war on drugs, so-called, has fed into the so-called war on terror. Because if you take a look at the preponderance of this prison population, we have the largest prison population in absolute terms in the entire world here in the United States. There is a behemoth of a country in Asia called China that is still ruled by something that calls itself the Chinese Communist Party. They're officially a communist party. Their official doctrine is that they seek the conquest of world socialism. They rule through totalitarian means, albeit in a relatively lighter fashion than prevailed, say, a generation ago. That's not to say that all is sweetness and light and beer and Skittles in China right now. It's to say that it's a little bit better than it was when it was being rained over by the world's most prolific mass murderer, Mao Zedong. But China has a smaller prison population than the United States, in spite of the fact that it's several times larger than the population of the United States. And most of the people who are in prison right now are in prison because of narcotics charges, most of them nonviolent in nature. I'm of the opinion that that's perfectly stupid and is potentially suicidal, because you have these people coming out of prison with a narcotics background who go there, and then they become marinated in radical Islam.
And the most amazing thing to me, William, is we are really, of course, we know that we have to worry about this radical form of Islam. And so what do we do in our prisons? We allow people to go in there and to indoctrinate the prisoners in the radical form of Islam. Why would we do that, you know? Oh, well, with religious freedom. Is not religious freedom to let people, these radical imams, to go into the prison? They're financed by our good friends in Saudi Arabia, the Bush family, good friends. And we allow them to go into the prison where they've got susceptible and people, and we indoctrinate them in radical Islam, and then they come out. Why would we be surprised that some of the people that got indoctrinated in radical Islam in American prisons with the full consent of our prison system should become radical jihadists? I mean, if you look at what's going on, a lot of it just doesn't make sense. Maybe it does, and we wouldn't really like the conclusion, because it suggests this whole war on terror is as phony as a $3 bill. Dr. Stan William, go right ahead.
Well, when we're talking about this, the plot in New York, I find a couple of things that are very significant to tie in with what we were discussing just before the last break, with this nexus between the war on drugs and radical Islam, in the sense that people who are sent to prison on nonviolent drug offenses are often recruited into radical Islam by the religious leaders, the tutors, the imams, the evangelists, if you will, the propagators of Islam, who are allowed into these federal prisons, and often in ways that involve federal subsidy. So you're cultivating this population of people whose outlook on life is being defined by jihad. And then they're released from prison, and many of these people, particularly the ones that are not the brightest and most astute members of this population, find themselves falling under the influence of these federally subsidized, these federally recruited and trained agents provocateur, the informants, the people who are in the business of recognizing talent, scouting people who can be used by the federal government to create these instant jihadi groups. You know, you take a handful of, you know, that's the recipe for faux jihad, if you will. Take a handful of recently paroled ex-cons who are converts to Islam, and then add one federal agent provocateur. Bingo, instant jihad. And with this group here in New York, I found an interesting little parallel here, in that according to the MSNBC report, the criminal complaint identifies Mr. Cromiti, who is the only one apparently who's got any sense at all, as the instigator of the conspiracy, telling the informant last July that he wanted to join Jaish-e-Mohammed, a Pakistani terrorist group with which the informant claimed to be involved. A authorities say Jaish set up training camps in Afghanistan under the Taliban, and several senior operatives...
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is William Grigg, and he was simply talking about the fact that there is only one of the four of these, a group recently arrested here in New York, really seemed to have any intelligence. He apparently had told the government agent, the agent provocateur, his job it was to incite people to do jihad. But go ahead, you tell the story.
Yeah. Mr. Cromity, or Cromity, his parents lived in Afghanistan before they came here to the United States. He is an American citizen of African ancestry. His parents apparently were Muslims, although I don't know for sure. I don't know enough about his background to say that that was the case. I don't know why anybody who's not a Muslim would want to live in Afghanistan, but apparently his parents lived there for some period of time. And Mr. Cromity was very angry about the war in Afghanistan. As a matter of fact, I've got good friends who are Afghanis who are very angry about the war in Afghanistan. You probably remember Abdul Shams, Dr. Stan. Abdul Shams was part of the pro-American faction of the Mujahideen who were fighting against the Soviet Union's occupation troops in Afghanistan during the 1980s. And he came over to the United States. He was sponsored on a speaking tour. And he, among other things, carried with him these incredible, heart-rending photographs of Afghan children who had lost limbs because of booby-trapped toys that were being left by the Red Army. And he also talked about the fact that got little attention in the press that the Soviet Union's invasion and occupation force in Afghanistan was using chemical warfare, biological warfare and chemical warfare against the Afghans. So Abdul Shams is somebody who's always been very pro-American. He lives in the Bay Area, I believe, in California now. I'm not sure, but when last I spoke with him, it was 1998. He called me up the day that Bill Clinton at least a couple of missiles so as to distract the public from the fact that Monica Lewinsky was being deposed that day. That was, I believe, in August or July of 1998. And Abdul Shams called me up, and he invited me to go to Afghanistan with him, and I couldn't get permission from my editor to go at the time. My wife was even less inclined to give me permission to go. But he wanted to take me over there and talk with some people about what was happening on the ground, and he was incandescent with rage over the fact that the United States was firing cruise missiles at Afghanistan, his country of nativity. I don't know if that is the same type of situation he had with this committee fellow, but he says that he was very angry over the fact that the United States was waging war in Afghanistan. And apparently somebody overheard him and introduced him to this agent provocateur, who, according to the MSNBC account, was a person who identified himself as a representative of a Pakistani group called the Jaish-e-Mohammed group, which had training camps in Afghanistan under the Taliban. Now, there is indeed a group by that name, and they are very close to the ISI intelligence agency of Pakistan, which was what? Funded by and controlled by the CIA, which helped set up both the Taliban and those elements of radical jihad that we now refer to as Al-Qaeda. Jaish-e-Mohammed is a project of a group which is controlled by the CIA. You have this guy identify himself as the representative of a CIA-controlled terrorist group from Pakistan, and he apparently was telling Mr. Cromity and the other three who were involved in this group that he could provide them with Stinger anti-aircraft missiles. They never got a hold of those, but apparently, just over the last week or so, this FBI-controlled provocateur helped them assemble supposed improvised explosive devices, which is to say homemade bombs of very dubious construction and very dubious yield. As it happens, they were completely inert. The bombs were props. They were dummies. There was no way that they could have been used to carry out any of the attacks that were being orchestrated by this FBI informant against the two synagogues in New York. And by the way, what does it say? What is the mindset of the FBI that they would not only incite people to attack synagogues, but leave open the possibility that some harm might actually befall the people who are worshiping in these synagogues? I think that's an incredibly cynical and potentially deadly thing that the FBI is messing with there. But in any case, this plot was foiled, of course, because there was nothing going on that would actually lend itself to the consummation of any lethal design on the part of these people, but they've been charged with a conspiracy to commit terrorism using weapons of mass destruction. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Stan, you and I talked about a case in South Carolina last year where a teenager, a very disturbed young man, who had apparently become somewhat fascinated with the Columbine massacre, planned to conduct his own little rampage. Or at least he put in his journal thoughts that lent themselves to the idea that this young man harbored the ambition of running amok and killing some of his classmates. And toward that end, he tried to procure through the mail, obviously not one of the brighter, more forward-thinking young men he'd run into, a quantity of ammonium nitrate fertilizer. It's not illegal to own ammonium nitrate fertilizer, but it can be distilled into a very high-yield explosive if you know what you're doing. And this kid didn't know what he was doing. He wanted to manufacture a manure bomb, and he was brought up on federal charges of terrorism involving a weapon of mass destruction. Now, when a manure bomb can be categorized as a WMD, you've really gone through the looking glass here. Really, words mean nothing, because the only weapon of mass destruction that's worthy of that title is the atomic bomb or the nuclear bomb, the hydrogen bomb. Those are genuine weapons of mass destruction. You might say, for instance, a MOAB or some of the other really high-yield conventional weapons that have been used in Afghanistan by the U.S. military might be borderline weapons of mass destruction. There are high-yield incendiary bombs that involve the creation of a vacuum that is filled by the elements of a firestorm that might qualify as a weapon of mass destruction. But some poor schlep who distills manure into the equivalent of a glorified Molotov cocktail is not building a weapon of mass destruction, but according to the relevant section of Title 18 of the Federal Code, it can be considered a weapon of mass destruction, just as a hand grenade can be categorized as a weapon of mass destruction, or any firearm apart from a hunting rifle could be categorized as a weapon of mass destruction. Under certain circumstances, a pellet gun might be able to be referred to as a weapon of mass destruction, or a model rocket. The attack that Francis Scott Key immortalized on Fort McHenry, if we were to apply the current standards under federal law to that incident, the attack on Fort McHenry could be described in retrospectively as a British weapon of mass destruction, a WMD attack on the shores of the United States. But these people here in this supposed plot were putting together IEDs, improvised explosive devices, that probably would have had, if they actually had been bombs as opposed to props, probably would have had enough explosive yield to blow up a car and maybe cause a couple of windows to shatter. Those are not weapons of mass destruction, but that is the phrase that's going to be resonating in the public mind. These people were trying to build weapons of mass destruction. They wanted to obtain Stinger anti-aircraft missiles. They were going to use the anti-aircraft missiles to shoot down military planes. People aren't going to look at the fine print. They're probably not even going to look below the fold of the newspaper or going to click through on the story. They'll just read the headlines online or catch the actualities at the top of the radio news at the top of every hour or what they might hear or see on television. That's all they'll remember. They'll remember those key phrases, and these will form part of the sentiment in the public mind that is so useful to the government right now in terms of tuning our expectations here and making people receptive to the supposed need for this ever more intrusive homeland security state. I do think it's interesting as well. You take a look at this connection here with the so-called Jaishi Muhammad conspiracy, the Pakistani terrorist group. About, if I'm not mistaken, about 6 years ago, there was a case in New York, once again, involving a man by the name of Muhammad Musharraf Hussein, that's Hossein, H-O-S-S-A-I-N, and his co-defendant was Yasin Muhyiddin Aref. So one was named Hossein and the other was named Aref. Mr. Aref and Hossein were worshiping at the same mosque in New York City, and they were targeted by an FBI informant by the name of Malik. His actual name is Shahid Hussein, H-U-S-S-A-I-N. These names are going to get confusing. I'll refer to him as Malik. He's actually a Pakistani con man who was hired by the FBI for the purpose of infiltrating Muslim groups in the northeastern United States, in New York. I'm pretty confident that when the facts shake out about this con game, the so-called conspiracy in New York, we'll find it's the same guy, the same Pakistani con man, Malik, who was the so-called cooperating informant in this case. Why? Well, because as was the case with the conspiracy, the pseudo-conspiracy that was broken up a couple of days ago in New York, in this earlier case, Malik represented himself as a representative of the same terrorist group, Jaish-e Mohammed, or JEM, J-E-M, and he also was saying that he had access to funds that were procured through the sale of Stinger missiles. What he did was he approached these two guys in the mosque, and he made his first pitch to Mr. Hussein, who ran a marginally profitable pizzeria in New York, and he started to lend Mr. Hussein money, ingratiated himself with Mr. Hussein, offering him money as little loans under a Muslim custom of lending money without interest. So he was getting interest-free loans from this federal provocateur, this Pakistani con man, and then after he'd gotten him on the hook for the loans, Hussein said, well, you know where I got that money? I got that money from selling Stinger missiles on behalf of this Pakistani terrorist group. And so he started to meet with this restaurant owner and Mr. Aref, and they started talking about radical Islamic jihad theory and the application of jihad here in the United States. And it turns out that the whole purpose of setting up Mr. Hussein was to bring Aref into this little conspiracy because he was the real target here. He'd been under an illegal wiretap for a number of years, probably since 2001, 2002. I don't know why it was the NSA became interested in him, but there it was. And so basically they used this poor pizzeria owner as sort of a cat's paw to bring this guy in so he could meet with the Pakistani provocateur. There were about 50 hours of covertly recorded conversations among the three of them, and neither Aref nor Hussein, that is to say, neither the guy who was being targeted or the pizzeria owner who was being cynically used as a cat's paw, expressed support of any kind for terrorism of any variety. As a matter of fact, Aref, who was the imam of a local Muslim congregation, went out of his way to warn Hussein against getting involved with radical, militant Islamic jihadists. He said, avoid these terrorists, avoid insurrectionists, avoid Islamic radicals of all varieties. And he said you should need to promote Islam by doing good works and by being an exemplary citizen and by being a good neighbor and by being a good husband. Now, you know, quite frankly, if we're going to be dealing with Muslims, that's the type of a Muslim we should be more happy to deal with than somebody who's preaching throat slitting and all the other horrible things that are part and parcel of radical Islam. Hussein, the pizzeria owner, when he was told that this money that he was receiving came from JEM, this Pakistani group, he thought that he was being told that the money came from the proceeds of sales of a compact disc by recording act. He didn't know that it was a radical Islamic group. He thought that JEM was a musical act in Pakistan. And in August of 2004, Aref and Hussein were arrested by the FBI and accused of laundering money on behalf of terrorists. Well, the problem was that the money didn't come from terrorists. It came from the FBI. The $50,000 that had been fronted here in total to the pizzeria actually came from the FBI. And they found themselves in a situation where because they had been receptive in any way to the conversations with the FBI's own informant, they were accused of having a state of mind that was receptive to committing terrorism. And so they ended up both going to prison on terrorist-related charges in a civilian trial that really, in terms of the way that the rules of evidence were framed and the leeway given to the prosecution, was much more akin to the military commissions at Gitmo than anything we would be familiar with, even in our badly perverted and largely useless so-called criminal justice system. The prosecution was allowed to introduce all this inflammatory evidence as established facts, whereas you're dealing here once again with somebody in the person of Hussein, who was just a pizzeria owner who was being used as a cutout by the FBI and had no interest at all in terrorism, and you had an imam who had gone to great lengths to discourage Hussein from succumbing to the blandishments of radical Islam. The prosecution managed to browbeat the jury, basically through a full-bore onslaught, reiterating the parade of horrible things we saw on September 11th and showing videos of people diving out of the burning buildings and all these images that are, of course, so gut-wrenching and so affecting. These people who were in the jury were given basically orders here. Just think of 9/11 here as the all-encompassing, almost supererogatory cause that justifies sending these people to prison in spite of whatever misgivings they have about the evidence or the soundness of the case being presented by the prosecution. But at the core of this, you know, really the weevil in this whole mess is this guy Malik, this Pakistani criminal who was recruited by the FBI as an Asian provocateur. I'm very suspicious. We don't know who the guy is who is really the foundation of this so-called plot that was broken up this week. But I would be very surprised if you're dealing with anybody other than this Malik. Now, there are probably more than a few people exactly like him on the federal payroll. I don't doubt for a second that if we had access to the roster here, we'd find out that they've got a very deep bench when it comes to agent provocateurs and snitches of all varieties.
I'm going to interrupt you there because I want you to get out your blog site.
All right.
I want you to tell people how they can get your material and certainly get to your websites. Go right ahead.
The easiest way to get to my blog is to go to willgrigg.com. That's willgrigg.com. And if you go to willgrigg.com, look at the right-hand side of the screen, there's a list of outside links. The willgrigg.com basically is just a placeholder right now. I'm still trying to update it with new content, multimedia content, and so forth. But look at the right-hand side of the screen at willgrigg.com. At the top of the list of external links, there's a link to Pro Libertate, which is my blog. I update it between 3 and 5 times a week with an essay usually between 1,200 and, say, 2,000 words in length. These are works of investigative polemics. I'm an editorial writer. I'm an opinion writer. But I try to get below the surface of stories a little bit, show where what we're being told doesn't necessarily comport with what's actually going on as best I can understand it, and show how all these events that we're talking about have an impact on individual liberty and the dignity of the individual created in God's image. I have a point of view. My point of view I describe as that of a Christian libertarian or a Christian individualist. I don't apologize for importing my prejudices into my work as a journalist, and I try to develop stories factually in ways that will motivate people, make people angry enough to do something about protecting what we have by way of our liberties and taking back what's been taken from us.
Amen to that. Well, I think that people have to understand that freedom is under attack today. There are people who have a different worldview. They really, of course, believe in a feudalistic sort of society. They certainly hate the Constitution. They're doing everything they can to transfer the jobs of the American people, the wealth of the American people, certainly the manufacturing of this country to other countries, and of course they're setting up a surveillance society in the name of protecting us against those wicked terrorists, but they won't secure the border. They won't, of course, have air marshals on every plane. Gee, I wonder why they don't do that. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. Well, William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Well, Dr. Stan, first of all, I want to express my appreciation to you once again for having me on as frequently as you do. It's always a wonderful opportunity to discuss these things with you, and I really appreciate all that you've done over these many years on behalf of Liberty. I certainly wish that there were more people who were as animated about Liberty as you have been, and I think that what's happening now is that as the humane pretenses that have been thrown up as so much scaffolding are being torn away, and we're seeing really the true malignancy of the government that's ruling us, people are finally starting to understand what you've been talking about for decades, Dr. Stan, in terms of the people who are really running things and what they intend to do to us and do to the future of our children and the future of this country that we love. I think that one of the ironic blessings of the time in which we live is that we're going to be deprived of a lot of the material comforts that serve as tranquilizers, and people will be less anesthetized by this illusion of perpetual comfort and luxury and start worrying about what it is that defines them as individuals, what it is that they care about most deeply, who they really are, why they were put here, you know, who's responsible for putting them here, and how the agency responsible for putting us here intends for us to live. And, of course, you and I and many millions of people understand that the Creator who made us intends for all of us to be free. And by free, of course, that means free to follow His law and to find happiness in developing our talents and using them to enrich our lives and the lives of people around us, beginning, of course, with our family and our children. But where people are free to express their talents and free to receive the appropriate rewards for their talents, happiness ensues. That's the American formula for success. It worked in the 1700s, and it worked in the 1800s, and if it's restored in its purity, it'll work again today. And I look forward to the opportunity as the times become rough and the stakes become unmistakable, the opportunity to make the case for individual liberty protected by God's law, and I think that people are going to be more receptive to it than ever.
I really think you're right, Pastor. I was just reading that more and more young people are buying copies of Atlas Shrugged and reading that classic by Ayn Rand, and although I don't agree with everything Ayn Rand wrote. I believe that her ideas that people should be free is so very important. And, of course, she was talking about times just like today that are coming to pass. I believe we're going to have a wonderful opportunity to reach people. And through your efforts and the efforts of other people are doing what I'm doing, the Alex Jones and Joyce Riley and Pastor Chuck Chrismeyer and Bush Paul and really thousands of people, we're going to have an impact, and with God's help, we'll succeed. God bless you, William.
God bless.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I do hope, of course, you've enjoyed our conversation with William Grigg. I, at the end of the week, I always love to have him on because William can carry the whole program. I really don't even have to speak up, although occasionally I'll get so emotionally involved on these issues that I want to bring out certain specific facts. We are being misled and betrayed at every turn. And if we aren't involved, then we will lose this country. And men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And we have to be involved in what's going on today. So I hope, of course, you will join us in this epic struggle. Right now, of course, we can suggest that you get the material that we're offering, certainly the trilogy on the secret mysteries, those three DVDs, which we think are so important, Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. Riddles in Stone goes into what's really in our nation's capital, all the occult symbology there, because the occultists have been there since the inception of our nation. And then, of course, the Eye of the Phoenix, the third in the trilogy, and you can get all of them together at a special a reduced suggested price, or you can get them separately, whatever you'd like, but get them. Get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Get my talk, The Forbidden Secret. Get the syllabus that goes with that, and so much more that's out there. One of the new items we have is the syllabus, the membership list of the Brotherhood of Darkness, vitally important information. And we hope that you'll want to get that. And then, of course, we've got the new a 4-CD set on Deadly Assassins. We have a 4-CD set on the execution of Martin Luther King. He was killed by the CIA. We have a 4-CD set on the execution of Bobby Kennedy. And certainly we carry the book, RFK Must Die, and, of course, or I think it's Who Killed Bobby, and then the DVD, RFK Must Die. And, of course, we've got the material on the sinking of the USS Liberty. Those men were sent in their ship off the coast of the Sinai there in the 67 War, and they were sent to be executed. They were sent to be killed by the Israelis so that America could blame the attack on Egypt and then go to war. Just exactly as today, we're looking for an excuse to go to war with Pakistan and Iran. I mean, why do you think that President Ahmadinejad would be making all of these inflammatory statements? We've got missiles and we can hit Israel and we can hit American bases. Why would he be saying that, ladies and gentlemen? Stop and think of it. He's playing a part. He's inciting us and we're inciting them. It's all a game. Except an awful lot of good men have already died in this unnecessary game, and a lot more will die before this is over. It's up to you to help us get the information out. If you haven't seen my talk, Iraq, The Untold Story, or The War, The Untold Story, they're both of them the same, but you need to get the syllabus that goes with that. It has the documentation in it. You need to understand what's going on. Of course, you need to read the Earth chart if you get any of our other things. Oh, you need to get the little pamphlet on the working of the spiritual hierarchy. It's put out by the Lucius Trust. You need to understand there really are people out there who worship a different God. You get to understand the spiritual significance of what's going on. Why? DV set, the 10 DVDs, 5 in each part 1 and 5 in part 2, the final countdown, to put things into their spiritual perspective of what's going on. And Pastor Krohn does an excellent job of compiling all of the scriptures and then a lot of video footage that I think you'll find very, very enlightening to understand what's really going on. Today, we have an excellent DVD set on RFID identification. There are 4 of them there. Of course, we carry Catherine Albrecht's a book, Spy Chips. We have a 4-CD set or 4 tape set on Spy Chips. We want you to get this information. We want you to copy it and get it out across America. You need to get my talk on the planned police state. That's the planned police state.